Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I'm Brian Lehrer. This is my Daily Politics Podcast from WNYC Studios. It's Monday, January 24th. So folks, take a look at what you're wearing, your clothing right now. The New York State Legislature might want to know. Do you have a good sense of how your clothing, including your footwear, is produced? Because as the global fashion industry contributes an estimated 4 to 8% of the planet's greenhouse gas emissions, produces 20% of industrial water pollution from the making of your clothing, all while 80% of textiles wind up in landfills, there's growing consumer demand for transparent sustainability from your fashion brands, right? Maybe you're one of the people demanding it, but you don't know how. Well, biotech company Genomatica, claiming to pioneer renewable practices in making chemicals and materials, conducted a survey of 2,000 teens and adults last year on their awareness and preferences related to sustainable fashion. More than 70% said they were aware of the industry's environmental impact. When clothing brands claim sustainable practices, 88% of respondents said they don't automatically believe them, with more than half believing it's just greenwashing. And yet, 42% of consumers in this group of 2,000 weren't sure what makes a piece of clothing sustainable. Less than half said they didn't know where to find apparel produced sustainably. But more than half of the survey's respondents show interest in buying sustainable clothing, with 38% saying they would do so if there is clearer information on a brand's environmental impact. Aha. So, a new bill in committee in the New York State Legislature aims to provide that clearer information. The Fashion Sustainability and Social Accountability Act, or the Fashion Act for short, as it's being called, targets apparel and footwear brands in New York with at least $100 million in global revenue. So high-end brands are included with more mass market names like Zara and H&M. If the Fashion Act passes, these companies would be required to disclose their environmental impacts, including a partial map of their supply chains. Plus, they would need to disclose current policies aiming to mitigate these issues, including energy emissions, as well as water and chemical management. And there's more. Here to explain more is one of the bill's sponsors, State Senator Alessandro Biaggi of Westchester and the Bronx, and also Maxine Bedot, founder and director of the New Standard Institute, which calls itself a think and do tank seeking to drive fashion into a force for good, they say. Thanks, both of you, for coming on. Welcome to WNYC today. Senator, welcome back.
Thanks so much for having us.
Tell us about the Fashion Act.
Sure. So first of all, I'm just glad that we're here to have this conversation because this is an idea and an issue that I've been thinking about since I was in law school over 10 years ago. And so this bill, which you mentioned so eloquently, it sets out to accomplish three main things. You mentioned one of them, which is to make sure that there is due diligence and labor disclosure, specifically with regard to supply chain mapping, as well as wages, so that we're making sure that all individuals who work in the fashion industry are actually making a living wage, the local living wage that's required. In addition to that, it requires clear and very common and transparent reporting on energy, greenhouse gas emissions, water and chemical management. And then the third component is that it enforces these science-based targets and standards to make sure that we are ultimately reducing the carbon footprint of the fashion industry, which has for a very long time operated in almost a black box, by requiring companies that want to sell to the New York market to achieve these targets. The final component, which is with regard to the enforcement piece, is that the law would be enforced by the New York State Attorney General, and companies that are found to be out of compliance and don't remedy the issue within 3 months of notice that they are not in compliance would be fined, or may be fined, I should say, because it's a may, not a must, up to 2% of their annual revenues. And then that money would go into an environmental justice fund.
Talk more about the workplace responsibility, the responsibility of employers aspect of the bill? Because I think in the intro, I really emphasized the greenhouse gas emissions aspect, the global warming sustainability. But you brought up right at the beginning the employer responsibility in terms of living wages and conditions. So would you talk about that a little more specifically?
Absolutely. So, specifically with regard to supply chain mapping, I'm sure for your listeners, they're asking themselves if they've never heard of this before, what is supply chain mapping? And I think Maxine can also shed some light on this too. But when we think about the supply chain, ultimately what we're talking about is where does a product begin and where does it end? And so when we think about where it begins, we think about the actual cloth or the actual textile, and then it goes into a factory, and then who's putting together that pair of jeans, for example, who's on the, you know, in the factory doing that, whether it's sewing or putting it through a machine. And then once it leaves the factory, where is it going and how is it being distributed and where is it being distributed and sold? Each part of that supply chain, it's incredibly important to make sure that there are labor standards being enforced and also followed. And so we find and we know that in the supply chain and fashion, there is a long history, an unfortunate and sad history of human trafficking, of slave wages, of slave labor, of child labor. And so one of the components is to make sure that every single part of that supply chain is actually free and clear of that. In addition to the fact that we want to make sure that all individuals, regardless of where they work, whether it's in a small manufacturing facility or whether it's in a startup in someone's, you know, in someone's apartment, that every single person is actually being paid a fair wage according to New York City, New York State standards. Now, just as a reminder, even though this bill is a New York State bill, the impact will actually be global. And part of why that is that's the case is because the direct impact, yes, we know, is that it's New York State legislation. However, a lot of fashion companies that have this gross revenue of over $100 billion are companies that are also selling in other states, in other countries, and around the globe. And so if they have to make sure that each part of their supply chain or that their labor standards are free and clear of all of the things that I've just mentioned, it doesn't just impact New York, because what we will be looking at is how this company operates in totality, which is why this bill is so unique and also, frankly, so so transformational for the industry.
Yeah, we have a good point of leverage here in New York State. Some of our listeners may know the California environmental sustainability standards for many products, which have driven the manufacture of things globally, just because California is such a big market. And they don't want to have to sell two versions of their products, and probably same thing in this case, at least potentially. So, Maxine, what would the consumer see? Would it be like the nutrition label on the foods that we can buy in the supermarket, a label on every garment? Or how would this clear, assuming the information is clearly presented, where would it be presented? Where would the consumer run into it?
Yeah, I think the best kind of parallel is what the one you mentioned, the California fuel efficiency standard. So the in that case, you know, it was across the board standard. It didn't require then the consumer to kind of navigate what is the best and worst choice. It made that requirement the one of law. And so this is a very, you know, similar type of legislation, and it's really not making the consumer get a PhD in sustainability. It's really baked into what the products that will be sold in this state would be. And there's kind of talk from the industry about, you know, then using these standards to showcase on a label, but it's removing that guesswork from the consumer so that they can just know that if they are buying a product, a fashion product in New York, that it's going to have the standards that New York is demanding.
And Senator, I know you have to go in a minute. Just talk about this one thing. Does this bill, as groundbreaking as it might be, go far enough to actually have an impact? Because I know some consumer advocates say, historically, transparency isn't enough, that just because consumers know something, that has not done enough to drive change in how things are made or how workers are employed. What's your response to that?
So my response to that is that I think we can always do more. And this bill is a pioneer in regulating fashion. And here's why. Because even though there are three components of this bill, and it doesn't necessarily cover every single solution to dealing with the issues that relate to the fashion industry, what we have seen, not only in the United States, but also in other countries like Germany and across the EU, is that there are components of the bill that we've introduced happening, meaning that maybe they're just looking at the labor standards, or perhaps maybe they're just looking at the science-based targets with regard to the carbon footprint that a fashion company is making in their specific industry or area of the world. However, no state or country has taken all of these components and put them together in one bill. And so this is not only an important step, but this will actually make it so that the fashion industry is treated just like, as Maxine mentioned, almost every other industry when we think about consumer goods, right? We think about food. Now, obviously, every place can be improved, but when we look at our food labels, when we look at how we're buying gasoline, when we look at how we're buying cars or even buying homes or other products, there are very clear standards in place. But when we're buying a piece of clothing or an item from the fashion industry, we are really just being essentially given information that doesn't have any consistent or clear standard in the grand scheme. And so when we look at something that says, oh, this is a green, you know, this shirt is green or it's sustainable, what does that mean? There aren't clear definitions across the board. It's very much disorganized and also leaves the consumer perhaps maybe feeling good that they purchased an item that they believe is green, but there is also a lot of greenwashing going on. And so this I really cannot emphasize it enough, a truly transformational step. And it's an important step that I am really looking forward to, not only building the coalition that we've already built on about, but really thinking about how we can even perhaps make it stronger in particular items that we put into the bill, like the labor standards. Now, I just want to, you know, end with this one important note. There are a lot of companies that have taken really amazing just leads in this particular issue. So when we think about like H&M, Nike, The Gap, they've really set out to reduce their carbon emission targets or to recycle clothing that perhaps, you know, we ultimately will see, as you mentioned earlier, Brian, sometimes it's dumped in the desert, in the Atacama Desert is one area in Chile. We know it's also dumped in other areas of the world, like West Africa. And so the point being that there are companies that have really taken earnest and very important steps. However, it's not standardized. It's not consistent. And when we think about New York, New York is the fashion capital, if not, you know, one of the most important fashion capitals of the entire world. And so this is a place that not only will have an impact globally, it will truly set the standard and be a leader for other areas in the world to follow our lead.
New York State Senator Alessandra Biaggi from Westchester in the Bronx, a sponsor of what is being called the Fashion Act. Thanks for giving us a few minutes. And let's take a call from Leon in Kansas City. Leon, you're on WNYC. Thank you for calling in.
Thank you, Brian, and I love your show. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I've been in footwear manufacturing my whole life, and I am personal friends with a man named Jean-Luc Bidigan. He's French, and his family was the owners of Baby Bot, a very large children's shoe company in France. He was hired as the president of the children's division of Bata, B-A-T-A, which is the largest privately held company of any kind in the world. And they're the ones that are making all the shoes we're talking about now. So they're in Brian, in your closet, you don't have any shoes that were not made by Bata, and neither does the political guest you just had on. Every shoe you have was made by Bata.
You mean regardless of the brand name that's on it?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. 100%. I guarantee you. And also, I guarantee you this. If you snip with a scissors, destroy a shoe, take a snip of any part of the shoe and send it to a lab, you'll find it's contaminated with horrible chemicals. Horrible. The people, I happen to know what people are being paid in China to manufacture footwear, Nike, etc. They're being paid 1 to 1.5 cents per hour. And this is not hyperbole. This is what the president of BATA told me in a three-hour conversation. He disclosed everything that was going on. And a month after that, he quit his position. He couldn't handle it. So,
And Leon, I'm gonna leave it there. I really appreciate your call. Please do call us again. But for time purposes, you put a lot on the table, and I want to get a response from Maxine Beda, founder and director of the New Standard Institute. So, Maxine, first of all, is it true, as far as what you know, that all our shoes, no matter what label is on them, come from some central manufacturer named BATA? And the other key thing he brings up, I think, that's relevant to the Fashion Act being introduced in the New York State Legislature is, can it control what they do in China with the sweatshops?
Well, it is true that there are major fashion players, consolidated manufacturers. It's not one single manufacturer, but we only kind of see the brand side, but several brands, can be using one manufacturing facility. That is often the case. They are, sharing the same facility. It's not necessarily one, but these companies are now huge conglomerates themselves that are doing either the cut and sew or the textile production. So there is a large, semi-consolidated space that we don't see as consumers. Mm-hmm. And it is true, as the caller mentioned, that there is major chemical management issues in the space, major issues with forced labor and child labor in the space. As we've already discussed, a massive contributor to the climate crisis. And unfortunately, if we do not stop it, it's only growing. And I think it's really key to highlight how this industry is one of the least regulated, currently one of the least regulated industries out there. So, everything in that respect that the caller mentioned is absolutely true.
And let's take one more call. Jim in Spring Lake, New Jersey says he's a labor rights advocate for Southeast Asian Nike workers. Jim, thank you for chiming in on this. You're on WNYC.
Brian, thanks for having me on. My name is Jim Keady. I'm a former professional soccer player and was a Division I college coach at St. John's University in New York City, where I lost my coaching job back in the late 90s because I refused to wear and promote Nike's products because of their sweatshop abuses. That activism took me to the slums of Indonesia in the summer of 2000, where I went and lived with Nike factory workers and tried to survive on their wages, at the time $1.25 a day. And I lost 25 pounds in a month living on a Nike sweatshop wage, and have spent the last 24 years of my life going back and forth to Indonesia and meeting with factory workers and doing campaigns to raise awareness about their wages and the working conditions, and Nike dumping and burning their scrap shoe rubber in villages all around Indonesia, and all the things that this bill is going to try to address. The concern that I have in reading the bill and listening to the commentary is, who is going to do the independent research to determine that these companies are not lying to the legislatures, legislators, because I can tell you, if you print out Nike's corporate code of conduct, the thing is about 2 inches thick. A third of it is about their claimed commitments to lowering their carbon footprint and all these things that they're telling people that they're doing with the greenwashing. But if we went on the ground in Indonesia right now, I can guarantee you we will find scrap shoe rubber being burned in villages. Mm. I could get you to talk with middle managers who will tell you about the two sets of books that are kept for the Nike auditors who come in, who create their corporate responsibility reports, and for what's really going on at the factory. So,
Jim, I'm going to leave it there. Thank you very much. All right. How do we trust what they tell us, Maxine?
Yeah, well, first, I wanted to thank the caller for, making such a brave decision and choice and for his advocacy. I think he raises an important point. In trying to develop these global regulatory systems, which is, what we need to create in order to regulate a global industry. Part of how we get to do this is ensuring that the disclosures are not just whatever the company says, but they are third-party verified. And that is one, you know, one component about it. And then it's really, in addition, up to the Attorney General's office to go after these companies where there might be fraud. And none of this is, you know, is a straight perfect science, but this is how we begin to have real consequences for, you know, the issues that the caller just mentioned, and ensure that the disclosures that we are getting are accurate and third party verified, which is in the bill right now.
Jim, thank you very much. You want to do a little political handicapping before you go? We know Senator Biagi, who's just on, is one of the most progressive members of the New York State Senate. Is there a critical mass to pass this bill and force clothing manufacturers to disclose their sustainability practices and the way they treat their workers?
I think there absolutely is. I mean, we have a very broad coalition, and you know, we're expanding it and seeing that there is such enormous interest. And I think young people in particular are deeply concerned with the impacts of this industry, and they're saying no. They are, you know, ready to call their senator, call their assembly member, and make sure that the products that they are purchasing are not going to ultimately impact the planet and its people. And so we're thrilled about that, and we're thrilled with the companies that have stepped up and said, we want to be a part of this. We know that there is serious work to do in our industry, and we're ready to do the hard work. And so it's going to be a broad coalition that gets this to the finish line. But the moment is certainly now, and its time is certainly of the essence.
Maxine Beda, founder and director of the New Standard Institute, which calls itself a think and do tank, seeking to, quote, drive fashion into a force for good. Thank you so much for joining us with this.
Thank you for having me.
Brian Lehrer, a Daily Politics podcast, is an excerpt from my live daily radio show, The Brian Lehrer Show, on WNYC Radio, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time, if you want to listen live at WNYC.org. Thanks for listening today. Talk to you next time.